You're locked on the only RC podcast that keeps the rubber down the whole time. O Canada RC, the podcast. Now it's time to walk the track with your host, Jeff Lemoyne. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to O Canada RC, the podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Lemoyne, and we are happy to welcome back to the show for the second episode of Get Your Paint On, Bradley Farmer. Bradley, how's it going?
Hey, good, Jeff. Glad to be back, man.
Yeah, good to have you back on the show. We started in on a series on bodies and preparation and painting and design, and we're going to get into that, but before we do, a couple names I want to throw at you. Laser Nut and Haas. Those mean anything to you?
Maybe new vehicles?
Yeah. You're bang on, man. Bang on. Yep. Two new vehicles, one from Losi, one from Traxxas. So it's good to see the hobby continuing to grow and evolve. And some interesting conversation around those two. But, you know, we'll save that for another time because I know we've got to get deep into design and body preparation. We talked a lot about preparation of the body last time we had you on. For our listeners, as just a quick recap, you know, what kind of body to pick, the kind of material to pick, and how to prep it. And that leads us to tonight, where we're looking a little deeper, and we're getting ready to paint, but we have to prep the body just before that happens. So why is body prep so vitally important?
Yeah, it's a good point, a good question. A lot of people ask, you know, what how do I go about starting to paint the body out, and what all is involved in. I think body prep is one of the important parts of it, because if you don't do it right, you're probably not going to have a really great successful, you know, paint job turnout, or the paint may not adhere right. So it's something you definitely want to take your time on and do the correct, you know, procedures on it to make it work.
So yeah, why is it so important to prep to wash and dry that body properly?
Yeah, definitely the prep work and the washing is really important, because when the bodies are molded and manufactured, there's a mold release. It's on the inside of the bodies, and what you need to do is make sure that you get that, you know, correctly washed off the body, because if not, it's kind of a barrier between the paint and the body itself, and it won't let the paint, you know, stick and adhere. So you definitely want to get that washed off. One of the basic things, and it's real simple, that I use is like a regular dish soap, like a Dawn or anything like that, that takes oil off of your hands or anything,
right?
And just use like a warm water,
yeah,
and suds it up, you know, and once it's all washed, make sure you rinse it off thoroughly. And what you want to be careful too is like any of the little smaller crevices or the wing areas, yeah, or any type of the windshields, you know, get those areas nice and clean as well. And then I just wash them off and dry them with your basic paper towel. Some people use like a regular dish towel. But they do have the fibers and stuff still on them. So I use kind of like a paper towel to get, you know, most of the water that's on it off of it. So
like a shop towel, like a lot of us have those blue shop towels if you're in this hobby. So those would be a good option.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Those will work too. The thing that you're trying to do is just don't have any oil or anything on your hands as well while you're doing it. So it's kind of, I always tell people a lot of times too, if you can use, some people use like a latex glove. Because just sometimes the oil from your hands and just touching it will cause it to keep the oil on it. So,
yeah, and I mean, like, these bodies, you put a lot of time, I mean, you know this better than anybody, how much time you put into prepping them, and the detail and the crevices, whether it's in the fender wells or the, like you said, around the windows and there's so many details that if you're not taking your time, you're not going to get the best result.
Yep, that's correct. And usually if you find out that if you don't clean it off, that'll be one of the areas that the paint, will start to pop off of. So,
and you'll be kicking yourself because it takes
that you will.
It takes an extra 5 minutes to do it right. So might as well take your time and do it right.
That's true.
So you mentioned scuffing in our conversation sort of off the air. What do you mean by scuffing, and what should people know about that?
It's a good question. What a lot of people do is you can take the inside of the body, since you're painting it from the inside. You can take a light grit sandpaper, or some people even use like a steel wool, and kind of scuff that body up. And you'll see it kind of get kind of hazy and kind of, it's not as transparent. But what it does is when you paint, the paint will actually fall into those scratches, and it'll actually kind of help the paint stick in here a little bit better. Typically, I don't do that. Sometimes if there's a bigger vehicle, like a fifth scale or something that's going to be, you know, a little more beat up on, you can take that and scuff it up in the fender wells, and it'll help the, you know, paint it here and stick a little bit better.
Nice.
But for most of the time, I do not do that, but you can do it.
Okay. That's good to know. I would never have thought that. So basically just the larger vehicles that are going to take a beating, maybe a short course truck or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And what you don't obviously want to do the windows, because it's going to still be scratched,
right.
And you won't see through it. Then the other thing too, sometimes they do have that mirror chrome paint that's out there, which looks really cool. You don't want to do it on the mirror chrome, because the mirror chrome is actually going to show those scratches in the reflection.
Oh, wow. Good to
know.
So
that would be the only paint that you don't want to do that on, or anything, you know, the mirror chrome nature. So
good to know that. And then alcohol wipes. I think we've all used a lot of those lately.
Yeah.
Bad COVID joke. But how do they relate to having, you know, an effective, clean body?
Yeah, what you can do is, if you don't have, you know, the dish soap handy, or a lot of times what people do is, even after they're through washing it off with the soap, you can also go back with like an alcohol wipe, you know, come in a little packet that you tear them down, and you can use that to wipe the inside of the body down as well. And it's going to take any type of leftover residue or anything. And I also think it's nice about it is it does dry relatively quick. So it's something good to use as well.
That's a good one for sure. Something I wouldn't have thought of using. So that's a good little tidbit for the listeners if they're prepping a body tonight or getting ready for it. Now, the next portion and thing we're going to talk about is something that's pretty scary to me. And I know to you, you probably laugh in the face of it, but it's design, right? This is a lot of guys, I think like me, get scared and go, okay, I'm just going to do one color. And there's nothing wrong with that, I think. Mm-hmm. I want to hear your thoughts on that. But
yep.
If you're thinking of trying to, you know, etch some flames into your design.
Yeah.
What's your advice for somebody who's taking maybe a deeper stab at it for the first time?
What you may want to try to do, and if you're talking just like for strictly airbrush using, kind of think about the whole body and the design and the layout and what you want to look out of it, and what you're trying to achieve. I think a lot of times people that are trying to maybe go out of their comfort zone or trying to take on too much at one time, start simple and kind of work your way up. You know, a lot of times people will want to do flames with checkers and, you know, all different types of items that add up on the body. And you can put a lot of time and effort into that, and it may not turn out exactly how you want. So I always try to, you know, encourage people and tell them, hey, if you want to start doing flames, and just do, you know, flames and your other basic color and some shadows, and then work your way up to where you can do more complicated things. But keep it simple to start out with,
right.
You know, because you're going to find out, like you mentioned, you know, your second body is going to be better than your first body and so on. So the more you do, the better you're going to get. But don't try to, you know, bite off more than you can chew, you know. So it's easy to do because you get the kind of image that you want to have. But before you know it, you got a lot going on. So, you know, keep it real simple.
Well, we're on that. I know I've never experimented with liquid mask, but I know you can, and I've heard good things about it. But that tape, you being a pro at this, you probably have the preference of the liquid mask, but are there times when tape is easier, or is there a benefit to one over the other?
A lot of paint jobs that I had done when I first started out, you can use tape to do a lot of the paint jobs that are out there. A lot of your simpler paint jobs are just more your parallel lines or straight lines. You know, if you're going to use decals and such to kind of help add to the body, you can get away with using, you know, like your 3M tape or a type of masking tape to tape off your paint job, so you don't have to worry about using the liquid mask. Mm-hmm. So some of your simpler jobs you can do with tape. There's people out there that do incredible paint jobs with flames and drips and everything using tape as well. But you have to kind of like lay it out and think it out a little bit different, because you're actually going to have to cut your flame in that masking tape versus like a liquid mask where you can kind of see through and cut it. So it's a little bit more difficult, and your paint job may turn out slightly different, but it can be done. You know, so I know a lot of people that do some cool paint jobs on, you know, masking tape.
And so with liquid mask then, because I think that's the big scary for a lot of guys and gals out there that are doing this, what are some tips for people who are, you know, cracking open that first bottle?
The liquid mask, once you start to use it and you start to find out how it works and how it's gonna, you know, fit you best for what you're designing your designs, you're gonna be a lot better, because it's a lot easier to lay out those more complicated designs. It's gonna cover the window mask, so you don't have to worry about the window mask being put on that comes with the bodies. And it kind of gives you a little bit more freedom to do the designs over some of those tight areas, like the fender wells, some of the windshields, the visors, the bed, the bed liners and such. So it kind of opens up your palette, I guess you could say, so you could do more different types of paint jobs on it. But once again, like you're talking earlier, you know, about how, don't make it too complicated at first. You know, start out and kind of get the flow of it, and how, you know, how the liquid mask works, and move on from there.
And sir, with the liquid mask, then, is this another exercise in patience? Because I've heard that, you know, you really have to let it dry. And
yeah,
it's
the liquid mask, what you need to do is you need to, everybody has an idea of like how thick of a coat to put on. You know, if I tell you to put, you know, two thick coats on it, how thick is thick? So the best way to do it is I apply it with a brush. I get like a 1 inch or inch and a half, like a regular paintbrush. And you can take it and you can apply it on. And what you want to try to do is to put a wet coat on it to where it's kind of thick, like a syrup, but you don't want to have it to where it puddles.
Yeah.
And the way I tell people that is, the areas where you're brushing it on, where you're going to get a lot of it, you'll see it want to settle in a corner and it's going to puddle up really thick. And what you'll find out is it doesn't really want to dry, because you're drying it from the outside in. So what happens is the outside dries, but the air can't get to the inside part of it to dry it. So you'll always want to be careful, just you know, some of the areas where you have a possibility of the liquid mask puddling, keep those brushed out thin. Myself, I typically put two what I call wet coats on it and let them dry between coats. And what I typically do is, for me, I may mask like 20 or 30 bodies at one time, so I'll take most part of the morning. And I'll liquid mask, put one coat on those whole bodies, and I'll let them set the whole day. And at nighttime, I'll put that second coat on. So in the next morning when I wake up, all of them will be ready to dry and ready to use. The other nice thing about liquid mask, and people ask a lot of questions, is how long is that good for to sit on a body? And honestly, I've had liquid masks sit on a body for over 2 years. And I don't even put it in a sealed bag, because the liquid mask, it doesn't, it still dries to like a tacky feel to it. So if you can keep it to where you're not going to get dust or anything inside of that, that liquid mask, it's going to work perfect. Like I said, I've done some bodies that's been, you know, set in half for 2 years, and you can still use it. So the nice thing too is, once you wash the body and you put the liquid mask on it, even if you can't get to it right away, that body is still good to go, because you have the inside of that body is still already clean and ready to use. So it has some good advantages to it.
That's amazing to know. I mean, guys, if you're just tuning in, this is your first time to this little series we're doing here, Get Your Paint On with Bradley Farmer. It's, you know, those are things you're not necessarily going to get in a lot of places. And when I say things, I mean tips on this. I would have never imagined or even crossed my mind that you could do that and sit for a month, 6 months, a year. And again, I think tonight's theme is patience. You know, you want to be patient with these bodies. They are a representation of you, whether you are a racer or a basher or a crawler, you know, whatever it is you're doing. So you want to take your time with them. And like you're hearing, like Bradley, what you're telling us too is just take it slow, take it easy. Don't bite off more than you can chew so far. So
the other thing too about the liquid mask is, some people, you can try to speed up the process. You know, you'll take like hair dryers and such, and it does help dry it.
Yeah.
The only problem that I've seen with it is it does have the tendency to thin the liquid mask out. So if you do need to speed the process up and you can use a hair dryer, I just recommend putting like an extra coat or two on, so it kind of builds it back up. So when you heat it with that hair dryer, it is drying it. And it does speed up the process, but it does make that liquid mask thinner. And one thing that you don't want to do is get the liquid mask too thin, because it doesn't want to peel off into one piece. So like I said, if you do, and people do that, and you can successfully do it. But if you do, you know, want to speed that up, put another coat or two on it. So
if, say, we've got our liquid mask on, and maybe, well, we went a little bit in reverse here, but maybe not. As you said, you can let it sit for a while. You're going to start thinking about your design. So when you come up with a design, just for our listeners, I think we talked a little bit about this again, but I'll ask you again. Like, where do you get your motivation? And if it's for a client, so if you're doing something for Horizon, is it like a 50-50 vision of creative, or how do you come up with
a lot of times
an idea?
When you're doing projects for something, whether it be a new vehicle coming out, you kind of go with what they're looking for. Sometimes they'll give you an idea of what they want, whether it be a paint job or a scheme from something in the past. But the hardest part is you kind of mm-hmm. have to interpret what they're visualizing that body to be like. So you kind of have to interpret what they're looking for.
Okay, that's fair enough. So like if average, you know, Joe RCers like me out there are listening and you know, they're doing all sorts of Google image searches on pros bodies and whatnot. Would you recommend that? Would you recommend just everything and anything from flipping through the pages of, you know, Car Action to looking at vehicles on the street? I think you mentioned before.
Yeah, I mean, you can come up. I find a lot of, you know, different colors and schemes from looking like it's Supercross or motocross helmets. To regular custom rods that are out there, looking through magazines of different, you know, hot rods that are out there. And you'll run across a lot of different paint schemes, whether it may be the color or the design layout, that you probably wouldn't think about. Or if you were to talk about, hey, these colors look great together, you'd probably have to see it to visualize it. You know, if you had like a lime green neon borderline outside of a raspberry pink flame, you know, you don't think it would look that good until you start to look at it on picture and lay it out. And so you can get some really good ideas, you know, by, you know, like I said, magazines or anything online, helmets or anything.
Yeah. So like for a lot of guys too, that may not have that visual talent, right? That somebody that a painter would have, that a professional painter like yourself would have. And they're trying to sketch things out. Is it fair to say, you know, just pencil sketch it out, get out the Crayolas, like try to visualize it that way? Like, how would you help somebody through who's not particularly
what I typically do all the designs that I lay out, and it's extremely easy to do, especially if you're using a liquid mask on the outside of all the bodies. They mm-hmm. come with the protective film that's on it. I think with the exception of just a few maybe mm-hmm. old school bodies where they didn't have the protective film on the outside, but to take a Sharpie marker, you know, and there's a couple different varieties out there that you can use, but draw that design out on the body. Just start drawing it on it. And the nice thing about it is if it doesn't work and it doesn't look how you want it to, just take some isopropyl alcohol and wipe it right off. It cleans it off perfectly with a paper towel and just start drawing over again. And what you'll find out is if there's a design you're trying to come up with, there may be part of it that you like, but you don't like maybe the back portion. So you can take and just erase that part of it too and then redraw just that section of it. So go ahead and use the body itself. It's kind of like your drawing template. Trace your window lines and the patterns and whatever you want to put on it. And that way kind of gives you a better visualization of what that body's going to look like. You know, put it down and set it out 10 feet away like you're going to be looking at it on the track and seeing if it's something that you can see and that you like, you know, visualize it. So it does help by doing that.
Really smart.
Yeah,
you mentioned tracing paper. Yep. Now I remember using tracing paper as a kid. My kids use it now.
How does that apply to a body? A lot of people find it interesting the way that I do it. Most of the time, if you're doing a body that's symmetrical, so the left and the right side is exactly the same, you really only have to draw one part of the body.
Right.
So whether it be the right side or the left side, pick whatever one you feel comfortable with. If you're left-handed, then you draw better on the one side of the body versus the other. But just draw out one side of the body. And then what you do is for each section, take the little piece of tracing paper that you can buy at your local, you know, craft store or hobby store and cut that out. And you just basically trace that line. And the nice thing about it is you just flip it over and you invert it and you use it for the other side. So for every panel or every section, you can just make a little template for everybody that I do a body for. I make a packet with a template on it. So therefore, when they want to repeat, you can almost make the second body as identical as the first one that you've done. So tracing paper is a really handy tool to have.
That's awesome.
The nice thing too, that like if you're doing a short course body, sometimes an easy way to do it is just start drawing off the hood because it's a nice big flat surface and easy to draw on. Draw that out and then keep in mind, draw a center line down the truck. So when you flip it on over, you keep the body kind of symmetrical from left to right hand side. But you can also use those hood or the roof templates.
Gotcha.
Use them on the side. So you don't even really have to draw it on the side. You can just take that same pattern. And the nice thing about it is that scheme and that pattern is going to flow throughout the whole truck, whether it be on the hood, the roof, the side, you know, the rear bed, the quarter panels, anywhere. So sometimes you can find that unique little template that you like and use it all over the whole body or any other body. So
that is awesome. Yeah, no, but even it's such a great tip, because even if I thought about the body mount that I messed up, you could even use it for something like that. If you've got one side nailed in terms of a body mount, you could trace it and find a center line.
The cool thing about it too is, like if you're doing on-road bodies, you've got all kinds of visual markers and reference points to get it really pretty close from left to right. So if you're looking like at a door jam or an A pillar or B pillar or C pillar on the car, you can kind of line it on up. And I use a set of calipers and indicators. So as you're doing it, it's just a great visual to get them left to right. You can get them almost exactly on. So,
and while that's technically helpful with the tracing paper, when I hear you say that, I suggest to the listeners too that, you know, the whole point you made about being able to use an element that you say drew on the hood of your short course on the one side and using it all throughout the rest of the body, as somebody who may not be as artistically inclined, that's a great
it's a creative shortcut, but you can find all kinds of pictures of bodies or helmets on the internet. So just lay it right over like your tablet if you're using it. And just since that tracing paper is transparent, you can duplicate that design and just trace it.
That's right.
And now you've got it. So you can use it wherever you want to. So.
Awesome. That's awesome. Those are great tips, man. We're going to, so everybody who's listening, I know you're holding your breath and you're like, okay, get to the painting. We're going to do that in the next episode, because I think Bradley and I were chatting about, I think that's probably one that'll hold weight on its own. That's obviously the penultimate piece when you're painting a body, is getting to that point. So the last thing I wanted to chat with you though about, well, two things, and this is the last sort of process piece with knives and blades. So when you're, whether you're using masking tape or a liquid mask, what would you recommend in terms of that? Is a standard X-Acto knife sort of key, or would you go to a hobby knife?
Typically do for most projects, you can use your typical hobby knife, and there's all kinds of blades that are out there to cut, you know, whether it be the masking tape or the liquid mask. And what I tell people to do is encourage them to use, you know, a blade that you're comfortable with, and, you know, experiment with a couple different types. They're not super expensive, so you can find some like your standard blades or number 11. There's people that can cut incredible designs with a number 11 blade. For me, I can use it, but I can't cut the fine straight lines that you know you're looking for. So I typically use a number 16 blade from X-Acto on pretty much probably 99% of the work that I do. There's other blades that you can get out there. There's some other cutters that are out there that you can get that have the same angle of blade, but they might be a little shorter. So if you're going in some of the fender wells or some of the detail areas around, you know, a lot of the off-road bodies have those, the tight fin areas where it's harder to reach it with an 11 blade or a 16, you could use some of these other knives that are out there that have the same type of angle. The other thing too is talking on blades, you don't really have to go through as many blades. I mean, I've heard people that, you know, this body's got the sharpest lines. It took me 6 blades to cut off this one body. And literally it should be just the opposite. I mean, I can cut out 5 to 6 bodies using one blade. If you're using that many blades, you're cutting too deep into the body. It doesn't matter how far down you push, you're only going to get the lines so sharp. So you don't, and you're actually probably doing more harm by cutting deeper into the body, because you're going to weaken it. If that body gets hit or pinched just right on that score, it will snap. So I always tell people when you're cutting through liquid mask, you want to feel like you're cutting through the skin on an apple. You'll feel it to where it'll drag. And
Good analogy.
The part you'll realize is if you accidentally bump the tip of your blade or you drop it and you go to recut with that, if you feel it where it's almost going to feel like the blade's on ice, you don't get that normal drag.
Yeah.
And you'll learn it over time, but you don't have to push that hard. You just need enough just to feel where it's dragging through the Lexan. And cutting through. So like I said, you can typically go, you know, 5 to 6 bodies on a blade. So
That's some on point advice. Get it?
You're sharp. You're sharp at this. See that? You're sharp.
Terrible pun. Oh, there it is. The comeback. I was hoping you pick up on that. So no, your analogy of the blade feeling like you're to Canadians, it's a perfect analogy. Because when we skate, when we play hockey, if you don't have an edge on your blade, you literally feel like you're trying to skate with the wrong side of a butter knife, right? So you'll know that feeling if you, and I don't want to be too stereotypical, but if you skate on ice, imagine that feeling, in, I guess, in your hands when you're coming on the inside of the body trying to make a line. What are you seeing? Just to, you know, this has been fantastic, and I think I encourage listeners to go back and listen to our first podcast on Get Your Paint On, and on this, the second one here. I think this is great advice, and if you're taking your time and you really want to, you know, try your best at a body, you know, listen back to what Bradley said in our first episode and this one. But before I let you go, Bradley, I wanted to ask you, in terms of, and this is a big question, so I mean, you can answer it however you feel, in terms of trends. So I'm going to ask about racing and crawling, because I think they're probably my two passions right now. But what are you seeing? Because, you know, a lot of times with racing, I'm staring right now at your the TLR body that you did for Chris Capello, who is a local pro up here, and it's a awesome design. And I'm wondering, how do you see trends change? Maybe not so much what are they today, but how often do they change? Because I mean, flames were big for a long question. Time. I mean,
it's
right?
funny looking back over the years, because, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, I think everybody, you know, they wanted to have the drips. You know, drips were big. Checkers were big back then.
Yeah.
You know, back when Adam Drake started running, that's everybody had like drips and checkers. And then you kind of see it kind of like, I don't want to say it gets old or whatever, but then it goes on to like a flames. So flames were popular for a while. And then it seemed like tribal flames came on, because that was bigger and badder and more aggressive.
Oh, wow.
And it seems like nowadays there's more like a spike pattern. But I think the cool thing now about looking at paint jobs, and I talked about it earlier before, it's like paint jobs and painters are kind of like musicians. So if you turn on Prince, you kind of get that Prince music or AC/DC or whatever. Because, I mean, like, for example, Biddy Designs. I mean, if you look at some of their designs they have, he's got some incredible work, but he does a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it like a grunge look or a dirty look, where it has more of the paint splatters or the burn spots or the flares coming off it. But when you see that, you kind of know that's a Biddy design. I do a lot of spikes and sharp, long, drawn-out, pointy flames and stuff. So everybody's kind of seemed like they got their own trend that they've got.
So cool.
Kind of changed over the years. But it is cool to see a lot of different ideas. Fluorescent colors are always popular, easy to see. You know, it's funny because there's a lot of guys that painted for back in, you know, the 90s, and they want that same paint job today. They don't want a new school. You know, they want that's what
it's
I
like
have.
Vintage,
that's what,
man.
That's me, you know. So, but yeah, it's cool. It's interesting to see that, you know.
It's a neat way that you answer that, because I've talked to you. I'm going to do some name dropping. So I talked to a guy named MR Custom Painting. Yeah. I think he's out of like Idaho. He does, as cool as your stuff is, his stuff is his own style cool. He does a lot of like thematic stuff, right? So you see a lot of Star Wars or kind of pop culture references. There's a local guy here called Toronto Leisure RC, and he's very big into the drift scene. So he does like a lot of almost scale type. RC Amigos, Pablo Guerrero, who we have on the podcast a lot, he's an awesome painter too, and everybody has their style. So I love the way you answer that question, because it gives like props, for lack of a better way of saying it, to all kind of your to the college of painters.
The thing
that's
funny
there,
too,
right?
is kind of the way that I look at it. I mean, I have people all the time, they'll call me and say, hey, you know, do me a design like this, you know, and they'll have somebody else's body they've done. I'm like, you know, I mean, in all reality, I mean, other than the price or whatever you're looking for, the turnaround time or whatever, but I always try to, if that's the design you want, go to that person and get it. You know, have them do it, because that's going to get you that realistic look that you're looking for. So if there's a design that you like and you look for it, you know,
that's
let that painter out, seek it out, and you know, have them do it for you.
Yeah, like I wouldn't go to Kenny Rogers in his prime and ask him to do some Run DMC.
And like I always say, don't go to McDonald's looking for a Whopper. You'll get something similar, but it's not going to be exactly the same. That's the way I tell people.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Listen, Bradley, we really appreciate your time tonight. For the listeners, guys, come on back. The next episode, we get into the actual physical act of painting. You know, we really appreciate your time. You know, you're doing this just sort of to help spread the love in this hobby, man. And we really appreciate your time. And we'll get back on and do the third of maybe fourth, but cool. Four. We'll talk about that off.
All right,
the
Jeff,
air.
Man, appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks again for coming on, Bradley.